Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anjana, head of growth at Sauce Group, a serial acquirer buying wonderful sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business success. And today with me is Rory, founder and CEO at Trumpet, auto-personalized and interactive digital sales rooms. Tell me more and welcome to the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on. And sure. It's a bit of a tongue twister that.
I know, right? I had to say it a few times before we went in. But yeah, good to see you here. And before we start with Trumpet, maybe we'll start with your background, because I saw a list of everything you did previously, and it's pretty extensive. So let's start somewhere there.
So from a very, very young age, I was always interested in the world of business. You know, I was that kid that wanted a job before you were old enough to have a job, selling sweets at school, everything like that. And strangely, I studied entrepreneurship at university, if you can believe that they have a subject on it. It sounds bizarre, but it was very much take an idea all the way to MVP. And on the last day of uni, you pitch it to angels. And I was one of the only students offered angel investment for an idea that I had in the world of pharma tech. And it just didn't get me excited. I knew I wasn't ready to build a company. I wanted to go out there and learn, how do you build these things? So very fortunately, I managed to get into a startup, and like most salespeople, I fell into sales. I just wanted any role. I wanted to see these early stage businesses. One of the very first hires in a sort of 10-person sized business, and ended up kind of building and leading their sales function. Went to a couple of other companies before I ended up at Hotjar, which is an amazing company, incredible culture. It was doing remote before everyone even knew about remote work. And it was there where I really came across the problem that Trumpet solves today. So startup enthusiast, obsessed with building companies, and then somehow 7 years later had 7 years of experience in the world of rev tech and go to market and all things sales. So, which fortunately teed me up for the world we're in now.
Okay. I feel like, you know, when you get into, you said you went into startup world and you kind of got into the first thing, which was sales. And I feel like still you need like certain gut to get into sales, because I cannot do this. Like when I see like super like sales experts doing their job, I'm like, no, like I would never be able to do that. So like, what do you think is kind of the, I don't know, maybe a trait that you have that is so special to what you do and like to being successful in it?
I wouldn't say necessarily just for myself. I think to succeed in sales, there's three key things that you really, really need to have in terms of mindset. The first is being curious. I think if you're not curious, you just become a bit of a robot. You have to really understand your prospects, your customers. You have to understand their world. Why are they taking this call? Why would they be interested in you? And you'll see a lot of salespeople join different types of companies. They're entering a new industry with a new product that solves different pains. So you've really got to be curious to want to go and do that and have to learn about all these different things. I think at the same time, it does require resilience, which I feel like you're leading to there, because it's grit, it's tough, it's 10 no's before you ever get a yes. And you've got to just keep going every day. Every quarter, your target is, you know, your kind of attainment is set back to zero. So yeah, it is never ending, but it is good fun. The highs are highs, the lows can be low. And then the third one I think is underestimated, but is being authentic. I think a lot of salespeople can be guilty of pitching too much. I think buyers are very aware of that. When you start just having a good conversation, understanding who you're speaking to, you build trust, you build confidence, rather than this is another salesperson. I think that's a big thing that I'm pushing for, is to change this negative connotation about sales. And if you are curious, if you are authentic, and if you have resilience, then you can go a long way.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's get to Trumpet, right? Let's untangle that tongue twister. What was that problem that you're now trying to solve, and how has it maybe evolved since you launched the company?
For sure. When I was at Hotjar, we were in a competitive space and we didn't have the best product. It was the easiest to use. It was maybe one of the more commercially viable, not necessarily cheapest. But it was also quite complex, and there was a lot of security documentation involved because of the tracking behind what the tool did. And I started to build Notion pages and Google Drive links to put everything that my prospects needed just into one space, because I was finding it overwhelming navigating everything via email. We were moving up market, selling to bigger companies. There were more stakeholders. And then the feedback that I started to get was, thank you so much. This has made my life really easy. None of the competitors have done this. And we started to think, hey, this is a differentiator. And now we're seeing it today. 84% of buyers care as much about the experience as the product itself. But the problem back then was building Notion pages, there were no analytics, it wasn't scalable, getting the team to do it wasn't going to happen. Looking at existing tools in the space also were pretty lackluster and very, very heavy build. And a lot of them were built for enterprise sales motions where you have a long and complex sales cycle and you can invest the time to go and build something. But at Hotjar, we had a big, big belief that every customer should be treated the same, whether it's SMB, because that's who got us to where we were back then, right through to enterprise. And we believe the same at Trumpet. So the idea was help every single company build seamless buying journeys with these collaborative workspaces. And fortunately, that's what we've achieved today. But yeah, built out of a pain point I experienced and my buyers experienced as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know that you've been doing quite a bit of research to validate your idea and, you know, to find who you will be selling to. And, you know, something that we discuss a lot here is that oftentimes, especially first-time founders, go to people who are like, yeah, super, that's nice, you know, build it, of course, and we're going to use it. But yeah, people are not basically incentivized to just give you the real feedback and tell you, well, you know, that sucks. Yeah, how did you know who to go after?
It's a mix. So you start with the people closest to you, and they are going to be a little bit more favorable in terms of their feedback. But you need to then make sure that the questions push them to give you the tough answers. For example, like, do you perceive this as a nice to have or a must have and why? How do you think that you would currently solve this today if you didn't have a solution like this? How much would you be willing to pay for it? These kinds of questions, like really probe and test them rather than just, would this be useful? Like, how would it help you? And do you think it's cool? I'm not going to say that that's what people ask, but you need to ask tough questions. You start with those people closest to you, and then you iterate on the questions and how they're formed. Because if you just go out to everyone all at once, it's then too late to make those changes. So start small, iterate on the questionnaires and the types of answers you're looking to get, and then go to market. So LinkedIn, Slack communities, there are so many out there, and people are willing to help. You know, I still get pinged probably once or twice a week from founders who are really early stage, they're looking to validate. And they just make it easy for me. They say, hey, early stage founder, I'm just going to drop you a couple of voice notes. I know you're busy. I'll follow up in a week. But if you could just maybe give a quick piece of feedback on this concept, that'd be super helpful. I think when you send people forms and, you know, it takes them 5 to 10 minutes to complete, I know that sounds like nothing, but people have priorities in life. You know, you're a stranger, they've never met you. So if you can make it light, digestible, why should they do it as well? Why should they help you, this person they've never spoken to? You've got to speak about, you know, kind of be honest, embrace the like vulnerable side of I'm early stage, I'm a founder looking for help, but equally, you know, would love to reward you for swag when we release, or, you know, I can send a kind of coffee voucher, these small things. People like to help other people. And also if you promote their expertise, like the reason I'm reaching out to you is you've kind of got this strong domain experience and it really helped me validate if I spend the next 5-10 years of my life investing in this world and investing my life into building this product. And those kind of 5 minutes from you would be invaluable. So I think it's, yeah, about honesty, about how easy you make it for them to respond and how you position it too.
That's a really great point. I think I'm also getting quite a few of those on LinkedIn, and it's usually either, you know, you're like, you're so great that we want your expertise. And then it turns out like they don't really know what I'm doing or like what the company does, where I work. So I'm kind of like, yeah, that's not really like, I'm not the right person for you probably. Or often it's, oh, you know what, this and this you're doing wrong and we can help you and let us show you how. And I'm like, no, if you're coming with, you know, you are wrong and I'm right, what? No, I will never respond to this, but if it is like a genuine kind of like, I have something and I think like judging by everything you're doing, this is something you could, that could be valuable to you. That's really the right approach. So thanks for pointing it out. But how many people that you went to that validated the idea and, you know, said that this is really a painkiller for them actually bought the product? And like, at what point did you ask them to sign that deal?
good question. So we interviewed 200 sellers who would have been our end buyers and about 200 buyers. So on the other side of Trumpet, so we sell to salespeople and then they're selling to their buyers. We wanted feedback of would buyers want to buy in this way? And of the 200 sellers, I think we had over, I need to double check, it's between 40 and 50% conversion. A lot of them tried out individual seats, got their team using it. So it was really strong. That early cohort, like it really resonated with them. Because what we did was we got their feedback, we baked it into our early validation and building of the product, but we came back to them as well and said, hey, your insights really helped us validate this idea. We want to keep you in the loop of how we're building Trumpet. Do you mind if we put you onto like a newsletter where we're going to be sharing weekly updates of latest releases, what we're building, kind of behind the scenes? Because we hadn't launched Trumpet and we wanted their feedback whilst we were building it. So we wanted to bring them into the journey, and that really resonated because people don't really get that opportunity to be involved, to see behind the scenes and have a say in how something's built. So that worked really well. At the same time, I think, you know, if you're going to invest your next 5 to 10 years of your life building something, you want to put in a little bit of money at the start just to say, to maybe incentivize people answering those questionnaires or however you want to form it. So, you know, if it's a few hundred quid you have to get together, I think it's worth every penny.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed because you started talking about, you know, communities and how to reach maybe your potential customers. And yeah, when I was going through your LinkedIn profile, I noticed that you're a member of like Pavilion and then what else was it?
Sales Enablement. Yes, quite a few.
Absolutely. You know better. So in those communities, have you also utilized them for this? And how do they, because you're still a member, how do you use them now? Like, is it more for resources or network or, you know, just kind of founder support?
Yeah, we didn't use it a little bit for the early validation. The benefit of those communities is, yes, there are lots and lots of channels with hundreds and thousands of people in them, but you can also direct message people. And it's different to LinkedIn and different to email. So, you know, the response rates were really strong in there. In terms of how you shouldn't be using it to like cold outreach and sell to people. It's, you've got to be very careful because you will get kicked out. But actually what we used it for is we were growing year one for us. We were building the product. We were building brand awareness because there was this new thing and we were trying to create a bit of intrigue, a bit of FOMO. And the other thing that we focused on was, well, how do we create awareness when no one's ever heard of us? So we really doubled down on like value-added content. So sharing sales best practice and tips and awesome tools that we're seeing and great podcasts and writing our own blog articles, because we had a year of building and we didn't want to just be in stealth. We wanted to be as loud from day one as possible. So in those communities, we would share, like we put together a list of, I think it was 300 best sales tools and mutual action plan templates, things like this that were really useful, kind of clickbait to a certain degree. And we would share those in the communities, which people were receptive to, and they engaged with, they thanked us, and then they started to follow us. And that's how we built our presence and our social awareness. So yeah, communities are invaluable, but you get out what you put in.
Absolutely. And is it also, you know, being loud from day one, kind of getting the brand out there, is it also the part of, you know, building your personal brand? Because you got, what, like 35,000 followers on LinkedIn, great engagement. How did you start that? Did it start kind of simultaneously, or was it dragging on from some previous ventures?
It was simultaneous. I started basically zero. And the reason for that is I think marketing is tough. Digital ads are tough. Everyone's competing for buyer attention, but people buy from people rather than your company page. But I think that the reason for it really was, as a startup, you're not meant to succeed. You've got to fight the status quo. You're up against incumbents. No one's ever heard of you. You haven't got enough budget. Your team's not big enough. So you have to take advantage of what's free, and socials are free. If you look at the power of whether it's TikTok, Instagram, or LinkedIn, it doesn't really cost you anything to post each day. And it does compound the consistency. And it's generated for us investors, customers, partnerships, brand awareness, all sorts. But it's never too late to start. The earlier you start, the better. But you are just missing out if you're not taking advantage of these channels. And especially if it's one where your buyers exist. For us, we're very fortunate. GTM teams, sales and CS are pretty active on LinkedIn. But outside of that, I know for other companies, it's difficult. You know, if you sell into oil and gas, maybe the people that work in that space aren't as present, for example. But yeah, for us, it's been absolutely invaluable. And we didn't have a super clear strategy. We just knew if we post value-added content every single day, it will compound and eventually it will pay off. And I think as a startup, the key takeaway is you need to give off the impression that you're bigger than you are, because you're up against the big guys. So that's how you compete, is you do the things that don't scale and you take advantage of channels that are free.
Yeah, we had a very funny situation here on the podcast when I was doing an intro, and the founder asked me to stop and redo it because he was like, okay, can you call me that instead of this, because we are way smaller than our customers think we are, and we just want to make sure that, you know, we kind of keep the momentum and, you know, keep the legend about us going. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Like, I think that's a smart move. I mean, for some, it is important. So yeah, good point. All right. I also wanted to ask about something that I just heard you talking about on another podcast. And it's the fact that you're adding services to the product. And I thought it was really interesting because, well, you have investors, right? And allegedly, no investors really like to have services added to their SaaS because, hey, like, it's not really scalable. It's getting more expensive. And, you know, it doesn't look good on your financial statement. So why did you decide to do that? And how are you navigating it with your investors?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
It's a very good question. I think we have entered a world where POG is the talk of the town. But if you look at companies that are true PLG and that we all look up to, Figma, Notion, Slack, Miro, it wasn't overnight. It took 5, 7, 9 years until they really had that PLG kind of flywheel going. And I think when you're creating a category and you're transforming the way people work, which is partly what we're doing, you cannot expect a brand new product that's a year or 2 or 3 years old to educate them entirely by itself. I think it's not naive, but we can't underestimate the importance that people buy from people. When they're getting started with a new product, they need that human connection as well. And equally, we've seen, especially in the last 2 years, the resurgence of CS, the importance of NRR, the importance of mitigating churn. We recently did a webinar on it with Pavilion, and yeah, the feedback was incredible. We had some amazing speakers on it. And I think CS has been underappreciated for a long time. It's seen as like an add-on, but actually 1 in 4 customers are lost during the handover from sales to CS. So that, you know, they've gone through this whole journey, they've decided to invest in your product. Now is the time to show them why they've done that, to wow them, to make that onboarding experience 10 out of 10, to ensure that they get the full value out of the platform that they'd expected and hoped for. So for us, CS was pretty much one of our first hires. After a couple of devs, we hired Russell, our head of CS, and we've never looked back on that decision, because investing in your customers is the most valuable thing that you can do as an early stage startup. Investing in CS early doesn't necessarily mean you end up with a gigantic CS team in future. I think by investing in it early, you hear the customer voice more, you're able to take action quicker based on their feedback.
you're able to build systems and processes and automations that can then scale from early on. So as you go through that growth and you have larger customers onboarded, you've already prepared for that. Rather than be reactive, you're being proactive. Because I think when you try and layer in CS later on, that's when it becomes heavy. That's when it becomes a kind of a very considered cost. But by investing in it early on, well, one, you're investing in your customers who've taken a bet on you. You're a new way of doing things. You're not quite there yet. The platform's a bit buggy. So by giving them that handheld white glove experience, you show that you're listening and that you care. And people are more patient with a product that's not perfect if you're giving them that 10 out of 10 experience. And that compounds. And people talk about that. And it all goes back to people don't just buy from people. It's also the business, the team. Like that's who they're really taking their bets on. It's the same with investors. In the early days, they invest in the team, not necessarily the product. And I think early customers and early adopters too. So I think it's more just rewarding people for saying thanks and then being that very close ear to them, their feedback, so that you can build the product together rather than for them. I think that's a really important thing. Is a lot of companies build for their users, and that's the wrong mindset. You need to build it with them. There's always going to be things that they don't know they need, and you need to delight and innovate, especially as founders. But actually having them on the journey, being as close to them as possible with an incredible CS function is one of the most invaluable things that we've done.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another question that I wanted to ask you, because again, just based on what you're talking about online, you seem like you're building very close to your customers or even with them. And it's a great approach. We all know that we need to listen to the feedback that the users and customers give to us. But, you know, you can become a bit of a, too focused on your bigger customers, let's say, or the loudest customers, and you develop this tunnel vision. So how to avoid that? And did you ever have a situation where you were like, oh, okay, I shouldn't have gotten that close?
There's always weight in terms of building for today, but we always need to build for tomorrow too. And it's identifying what is stopping your customers from doing what they need to with your product. What would enable them to do it faster? What is a real priority? And I think introducing like a scoring system of, impact versus priority versus difficulty, these kinds of things will help you then assess, does that need to get done right this minute or can it wait a week or two? And when customers give you feedback, you should feel confident to push back and just have that open conversation with them and say, if we deprioritize everything else that we've got to do and we build this for you, what would that help unlock? And if they're like, oh, no, you don't need to do that. It's just feedback. Then you know, because I think we get so reactive and we think we've got to take action on everything that we hear. And I think there's also the risk, as you alluded to, when you work with bigger customers, just building for enterprise or just building these bespoke, unique features. We've not experienced that yet. We're very fortunate that all of the feedback we're getting, it's going to be relevant for every other customer, which is great because we just continue building for the masses. That's not the same for every company. So again, I think it's pushing back as much as possible and challenging the why they need it. But then if it is something unique, trying to think of, well, how could this benefit our other customers? Maybe let's go and interview them and ask them, because that will help us to prioritize. But to get to that point where you're getting feedback, it's all about having Slack Connect channels with your customers, getting on site with them. Even though we're in a world of remote, being on site face to face, it's just, I cannot stress enough how valuable that is. And making it easy for your customers to share feedback, whether it's Canny or Sleek Plan, two great tools where they can submit in-app feedback, see your roadmap and things like that, Intercom, all of these things together, they need to be able to, in the moment, share feedback, big or small, so that you can keep iterating, shipping fast. Product velocity is the most important thing for any early stage company.
Yeah. Oh, and Canny is great. I had Sarah here on the podcast and absolutely love what they're doing. But, something else, another thing that you said there, and, I'm just analyzing everything, everything you're doing on, on LinkedIn, you're very vocal about, your experience. And obviously, you're running the business and you're hiring new people and doing all this online activities. And ultimately, you said that maybe at this stage, you're even doing too much and you're doing too many experiments and maybe you shouldn't be spread so thin. So I wanted to ask you if maybe you could share, you know, one of the latest kind of experiments or tests that you were doing. And how do you even get ideas and inspiration for like what to try next?
I think in early stage, there's always the risk of over-planning. And when you bring on every new customer, every new hire, everything changes instantly. So by having OKRs, and I'm not saying OKRs don't work. They work for some companies, especially when you're larger. But I think agility, that product velocity, is the biggest strength that you can have. And it's also the best days, being able to ship fast, be reactive, be agile, start with a V1 and like get the MVP out there. It's the most rewarding experience, especially as a product team and developers, but also for customers to see how you listen, you act, you iterate. For us, we were probably over planning too much. We had so many big ideas and we were thinking, how do we do all the big things? And then we started to realize customers were more receptive to some of the smaller things, making it easier to use, adding this little capability. And so there was a bit of that going on, but at the same time, AI, it's overwhelming. There's a million things that we could be doing. And again, we were over planning, overthinking. And then our director of engineering said, I'm just going to go and do an AI hackathon tomorrow with the whole team. And they went and did it. And they shipped about 6 incredible additions to the product, which we're very excited to announce. And sometimes you just need to do rather than plan. And I think that's the thing with experiments. We had so many planned. You just need to get on and do them. I think it's a better mentality to have.
Yeah, I agree with you. AI is fascinating. We have this new AI team at SaaS Group, and somehow I was always kind of lost on them. And we had a call, the first call a couple of weeks ago. And when they showed me what AI is capable of, like in terms of all the products that we have and just general automation of the workflow, I was like, oh my God, I'm living in a hole. Like, I know nothing. Like, this is so fascinating. It's crazy. So yeah, I mean, by all means, do the announcement even here. I'd be happy to hear all about it. But yeah, about the team, you know, something that I saw you talking about is the fact that new team members in Trumpet can actually determine like what they want to contribute in terms of company success and kind of determine their role. So I wanted to ask you, because I mean, you've been around for like 3 years, right? So it's still fairly early stage. And from my perspective, I mean, at this stage, you're mostly hiring generalists and, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. So does that approach mean that in Trumpet, whenever you hire more of a generalist, then you still give them an opportunity to kind of choose their path and like where they want to grow into that expert within the company?
To a certain degree, I feel like we lean more towards specialists, but we do look out for people rather than having a generalist kind of capability. We focus on an entrepreneurial mindset, because if you've got an entrepreneurial mindset, the generalist piece comes anyway. You're able to get your hands dirty, take on different projects, but we do focus on people who have specialist expertise because of the different roles and departments that are now shaping up due to the size of our team. But the thing that I'm a very, very big advocate for, and we always encourage everyone to remember and embrace, is in an early stage startup, you can create your own story. No one is ever going to stop you from tackling that extra project, even though it's coming next quarter, or speaking to a customer to get their feedback, or getting on site to meet with a prospective customer. Going out of your way, going above and beyond, that's how you have that's a real clear indicator that you have a growth mindset. If you have a growth mindset, that's how you become that person that did X at that company that went to Y. And you see those people on LinkedIn, they're almost like mini celebs in the world of SaaS. You know, they achieve something great. And it's how do you be an entrepreneur within a startup environment? And knowing that you've got that freedom, you're not being micromanaged, you're trusted, you're an adult, you are hired for your diligence, your expertise, your experience, your domain understanding, all of these things. If you're giving the trust and the freedom to put your brain to use, then you can achieve incredible things. But you need to have an environment where that collaboration and that trust is encouraged. But no founder should would ever want to stop anyone going the extra mile, trying something new, exploring a different channel, exploring a different industry, you know, testing something and experimenting. These are the days to do it. And you have to embrace that, because the path ahead, it's not defined. You have to create that path. And it can't just be down to the founder. You need people on the team who are creators, who are innovators, who want to help find out that path.
Yeah, absolutely. How big is the team now in Trumpet?
We are 25.
25. Okay, that's not a big team. So how do you... Yeah, okay, this is going to be maybe a weird question in a way. But, you know, in small teams, you can always kind of, you know, see where it's working and where it's not working. It's just a lot easier because everyone has their own little piece where they shine. So yeah, how do you, you know, how do you grow that culture where, you know, in the small team where we all are free to kind of determine what we're doing, but we still have, you know, our area of expertise where we have to show high performance and, you know, strive for your success.
We have a regular reminder of all the classic startup terminology pieces. You know, we're building the plane whilst flying it. As we grow, there will be growing pains. It is not a linear journey. For us, the thing that works is we get everyone in the team to be as close to the customer as possible. That doesn't necessarily mean our developers go on site and meet them, but we have a customer feedback channel. We're always, any small piece of feedback from any size customer, we share it in that channel. So everyone feels that we're building Trumpet together. They can hear the customer voice. They know the work that they're doing is, you know, it's rewarded by the product working and people loving it and sharing it and things like that. So for us, it's regular communication of the customer love of Trumpet, where we're at as a business, where we're going. There are going to be tough times. We embrace that. We address it head on. We don't try and ignore it. And the reminder that it is meant to be hard. You know, you haven't joined this company for a 9-to-5 fun job. It is meant to be difficult. It's how you grow, pushing yourself, seeing challenges as opportunities, all of these things. So for us, it's regular communication, the reminder of why we're doing it, the reminder of how far we've come, and the reminder of there are still tough times ahead. Yeah.
All right. I just have a couple of questions for you. The last ones, the usuals. So far, you know, it seems like you're building a great product with a great team and a really cool mindset. What do you think so far has been your biggest win and can be for you as a founder or the company, and the biggest failure?
Biggest win, biggest failure. Biggest win was actually this week just gone. We signed one of the top 30 software companies in the whole world as a customer. It's a company that we've looked up to from day one in terms of how you build a company, their product, their marketing, everything about them. It's, you know, it's a company that we use, we admire. So to sign them as a customer was, I think, a very, very proud moment for the entire team, because it shows how far we've come in such little time. It shows that all of their hard work is being recognized by industry leaders, like global leaders. And I think it was a pinch me moment for everyone. Everyone just couldn't believe it. So that was amazing, but it was very much deserved, because the work that the team put in is the thing that I'm the most proud of. It's an amazing, amazing team that we've put together. And in terms of the biggest failure, it's the buy versus build. So when we were first starting out, we thought that we could build a part of the product that rather than invest in an SDK, it was e-signature. We thought we could build our own e-signature from scratch. It turns out there are lots of e-signature providers and they all have their own SDK. It's something we're addressing very soon, but that was a big learning. It took longer than we thought. We spent too much time on it, lots of issues. And we now know how to avoid that moving forward. So good lesson learned, fortunately, very early on in the journey.
Right. Not a failure, just a learning moment. All right. Well, I'm glad you could turn it around. So the last question is always about a hack, right? And can be anything, can be, you know, growing a great culture, working with customers, saying no, anything that works for you, or maybe even worked once and you kind of wanted to work again.
Mine is it goes back to what we've, the kind of continuous theme throughout this conversation is being close to the customer. So the two things: get on site, go and meet your customers, invite yourself to their office, put on a breakfast for them and their team, put on a lunch for them, like whatever it is, that's how you build those relationships. Those early adopters, those customers are the thing that make you, they're the real MVP, 100%. And another way to do that is Slack Connect channels. We have Slack Connect channels with every single customer or Teams channels. And those two just mean that we have a continuous feedback loop. It's not a hack. I feel like it should just be a must for every early stage company. You know, yeah, it's been invaluable for us for sure.
Yeah, that's not a hack, but I think it's a good reminder that a lot of people tend to forget or tend to ignore in the remote world, especially, you know, the first one that you said to actually meet with people. We've been doing, I mean, we're not a product company, right? SaaS group itself, but we've been doing pretty great just being, you know, fully remote and kind of, you know, doing the deals like this, and it worked. But just going to like places, to conferences, you know, meeting people and building that trust before, we just see how, you know, how much faster things move once you meet face to face. So it's amazing.
It's a game
changer. All right. Yeah, true. Well, thank you so much for the story. You know, I think, like I said, I've been looking at what you're doing with Trumpet for a while, and I think it's a great product that you're building. And also, like, I admire what you're doing on LinkedIn, to be honest, stealing a couple of ideas from time to time. So thank you for that. Thank you for the inspiration. And yeah, happy to do it again sometime and see what you're building with AI.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. Looking forward to reconnecting. And yeah, hopefully I can continue to inspire.
Sure. Thank you so much and take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders. And if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS, but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.